Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What does a city trade away in pursuit of growth and progress, and how are decisions made about which historic buildings can be raised to make room for what is new and which deserve to be preserved? As Historic Preservation Officer for the City of Dallas, Mark Doty is deeply familiar with the challenging nature of such questions, and he is fascinated by the many homes, businesses, and public gathering places that have disappeared over the course of the city's history. He shares dozens of these locations in his new book, Lost Dallas, which is the latest offering in Arcadia Publishing's Images of America series. Mark, welcome back to Think.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
So I'm going to start this conversation saying something I don't think I've ever said to a guest. I was fascinated by the book. I loved reading it. It sort of made my stomach hurt.
I've actually had that reaction from a lot of people. They're like, this is actually really depressing to read this. And I understand that. And it was very hard to see all of these buildings that aren't here anymore. But as the Historic Preservation Officer for the City of Dallas, what I try to then tell people is that, yes, we've lost a lot, but we still have a lot left. Mm-hmm. You know, there's 4,000 properties that are designated City of Dallas landmarks within the city. And so what I would hope is that people will see what we've lost, recognize that, but then explore their neighborhood, go out and take a look and see, hey, you know what? We still have a lot that's left here in Dallas. Swiss Avenue, Fair Park, a lot of amazing buildings downtown, all the wonderful neighborhoods in North Oak Cliff. So that was I understand that from people, but it was kind of a see what we've lost, but then kind of discover what we still have here, which is still quite a bit.
Okay, so you mentioned Swiss Avenue. It is still very grand. I have to tell you, I've lived in East Dallas since I moved to Dallas. I did not realize that Ross Avenue was once a rival to Swiss, if not more elegant.
It was. I've been told many times that is probably one of the greatest losses of our built environment is Ross Avenue. You had essentially from the north side of downtown, Harwood Street, where the Bealow Mansion is now, all the way to almost Lower Greenville. That was lined with amazing mansions. And just as downtown, you know, commercialized and grew, and as Ross Avenue became more of an area where there were a lot of car dealerships and things that were, you know, automobile related, they just lost. We lost, you know, almost everything. Well, we did lose everything except for there are three mansions that are left on Ross Avenue.
It's the women's. Is that a former mansion?
The Alexander Mansion, which is the women's museum. You have the house that's next to Fannin Elementary School.
Uh-huh.
That's part of their campus. And then the Bealow Mansion, which the Bar Association now owns. And that's it.
Let's talk about schools, because DISD to this day is struggling with the question of it's very expensive to retrofit these glorious old buildings. There was one school that you included in there, and now the name escapes me, and I'll find it in a moment. But it was torn down in 1915, Oak Grove School.
Right.
It's the very picture of a school that you would see in a storybook.
Right, yes. And that was actually the twin of the Cumberland Hill School, which is still standing on the north side of downtown. But going through research of that particular school, the Oak Grove School, it was interesting because they got a really good offer from a commercial developer, and they just couldn't pass it up. And that was the time whenever downtown, the south side of downtown, started to really commercialize and develop, not as a residential neighborhood anymore. So they really could not keep a school open whenever they didn't have any students. And so they sold the property, and it became more of a commercial use.
When did the preservation movement really get underway? I mean, there have always been people who cared, but when was there really steam behind that movement?
Well, interestingly enough, Preservation Dallas is celebrating their 40th anniversary this year. And so it was the very early 70s of whenever we had a lot of individual buildings that were lost before that. But it wasn't until the city wanted to try to back zone or up zone Swiss Avenue to more of a multi-family use or more commercial use, that really galvanized those residents on Swiss Avenue to fight it, and they in turn created our first city historic district.
By the way, you have this book beautifully organized geographically, and I'm zipping all over the city, so you'll have to forgive me for that.
Sure.
The thing that strikes me when I look at these images is how in the pictures everything looks permanent. It looks like it's been there forever and like it's going to be there forever, including these really majestic mansions. There's this one Victorian mansion that is now was built upon to become First United Methodist Church of Dallas, which feels historic and is historic in and of itself. What was there before?
It was the Miranda Morrill House, actually, and that was one of the houses on Ross Avenue. And again, whenever Ross Avenue on the north side of downtown started, you know, to become very commercialized, all of these houses were torn down for other uses, and It's funny because some of these houses, especially along Maple Avenue, I have Ivy Hall in there as well, mm-hmm. which is where the Maple Terrace is now, and it lasted less than 40 years. Mm-hmm. And it was a very grand, ornate building, but it was just decided it was too expensive to upkeep, and so the owner sold it, and they tore it down and built what is now the Maple Terrace.
Yeah, I pass that every day on my way to work, and it's funny because that feels like an older apartment tower, you know,
right.
given the city's history, but we forget that we've been around since 1841.
And I think that's what a lot of people forget. I hear all the time in my work, you know, there's nothing historic in Dallas. Dallas doesn't respect its history. You know, there's no history here. And again, I point out that we do have 4,000 City of Dallas landmarks. But then I say, you know, Dallas is very layered. I mean, you do have so many influences. You have the antebellum, you know, influence. You have the new frontier. You have the railroads. You have all of the minority groups that contributed to the city. And so you have all these layers that build upon one another to make the city what it is today.
What kind of architectural styles were we taking from traditions in other places as we began to build things here?
Yeah, you had very, vernacular architecture. Obviously, when we first started out, you had log cabins, you had, you know, Greek Revival. And then, as we became a larger city and the railroads came in, then we got a lot of influences from the east, you know, St. Louis, Adolphus Busch. He built a lot of buildings here. The Adolphus Hotel, the Kirby building, which is still standing. Both of those are still standing. Really, where kind of Dallas started to change was more like the 30s and 40s whenever we started introducing kind of the Texas regionalism mm-hmm. With architects that would try to think about our own environment and our own building materials that we had here and trying to adapt the architecture to those. And, of course, the mid-century modern. Dallas was a wealth of mid-century modern architects and of architecture, and we still have some great examples left here in town.
I think we may have talked about this last time you were on the show. I live in I don't know that it's mid-century modern, but a 50s house. People don't think they're very special or fancy right now, and I wonder if 30 years from now, everybody will be lamenting tearing down all these fabulous 1950s homes to pave the way for new things.
Right. I mean, you have the minimal, traditional, you have the ranch style that were very prevalent during the 50s and the 60s, and I think that's kind of the next kind of focus on in the preservation community is how do we save these houses that were built at a very large pace during the 50s and 60s, 40s, especially after World War II, you had so many GIs coming home, and that's where the minimal traditional came in. But then even the ranch style homes, and I think it'll be interesting to see. In Houston, they've actually designated one neighborhood there that's all ranch-style houses, and it's their largest historic district. So we typically look at things that are 50 years or older as historic, and so we're getting into that time period of things that were built in the late 50s and early 60s as technically historic. So it'll be interesting to see how that conversation evolves here in Dallas.
Lots of people listening have probably attended events at the Majestic Theater, and I had not realized until I read your book that this was once at the heart of what was called Theater Row.
Right, and that was another great loss, actually. You had probably a dozen movie theaters that lined Elm Street from Pearl all the way down to almost Ackerd Street. You had the Palace, you had the Melba, you had so many theaters, and a lot of them were lost to the huge office towers that are there now.
The Palace was on the site of what is now Thanksgiving Tower.
That's right.
Just describe that place for us.
There's actually a picture inside the book. The outside was equally ornate, had a huge sign that was brightly lit at night. But the inside, it had this wonderful organ, crystal chandeliers, had a fountain in the lobby of it. And so it was kind of these places where you could go watch a movie, but then kind of forget where you were for a little while. And I think that's what the theater owners wanted to do, was transport you to somewhere different. Because whenever a lot of these were built in the 30s and 40s, the economic times were very hard. We had, world wars going on. So I think they wanted to transport people that were seeing the movies into just a different time and a different place, really.
Yeah, if you had your dime or quarter for admission, you could be anywhere.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Another really interesting thing is that downtown, like a lot of cities, was once the heart and soul of not just commerce, but everyday shopping. And what is now El Centro College was once Sanger's department store.
That's correct. And El Centro actually kept the original Langan Mitchell building, this built in the 19-teens, very beautiful, Sullivan-esque Chicago school type of architecture. And then they tore the rest of the complex down whenever they purchased the block, and then they built their existing building on as it is right now. But you had Sanger's, you had Harris, and then Sanger-Harris combined and built their huge store, which is now the Dart headquarters. It's actually in the book as well, but it's been so altered that it really isn't recognizable whenever it first opened.
So I'm going to give everybody a cliffhanger and let them know that after the break, we're going to talk about maybe the most infamous building in the city of Dallas, the School Book Depository. And after the break, we're going to talk about what it was before it was the School Book Depository. My guest this hour is Mark Doty, who is Historic Preservation Officer for the City of Dallas and author of the brand new book, Lost Dallas, which is part of Arcadia Publishing's Images of America series. We will resume the conversation in a moment. You can join us to ask a question at 1-800-933-5372 or to share a memory. If you would like to send an email, you can do that to think@kera.org. We would also ask that you go online to kera.org or call in to 1-888-694-6931 to support this station, which is able to bring you conversations like this with Mark Doty and Jeff Whittington, senior producer of Think. It's great to have Mark in because he seems to know literally everything there is to know about the history of the city.
Yeah, I really enjoyed looking through the book and reading about this. You know, my family's from Dallas, so it was really kind of neat to see all the theaters on Main Street, and there's the Majestic's still there, but there was a whole row. I mean, it's just such a great collection of photos and stories, and we're really thrilled to be able to offer you a copy of this book with our thanks when you join the station today with a contribution of $120 or more. It's just $10 a month when you become a sustaining member of the station, and this will be a really neat thing for you to have to know about what we don't have anymore in Dallas. A couple of buildings are still there, but it's really fascinating.
And it's fun. Mark gives the street addresses so you can page through and figure out where something is and what it is now. I do want to say the scuttlebutt is that there is a comparable book being worked on for Fort Worth. And, of course, that will be on our list if we can possibly secure an interview about that coming up. So I want you folks in other parts of North Texas to know we're interested in history all over.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So call and join the station. Support us, 888-694-6931. Don't forget, since it's a Tuesday, and it's in a big election year. It's the first Tuesday of the drive, hopefully the last Tuesday of the drive, too.
We will, knock on
we
wood.
Really hope. Since it's a Tuesday and we're gearing up for political coverage this year, we're also offering that really cool bonus gift today. It's the I Listen, I Vote Static Clean sticker with a KERA logo on it. And, you know, it's kind of a cool thing to show, you know, hey, I listen, I participate in this democracy, and I also support my public radio station.
Well, we know a lot about you as listeners. We know that you are committed to lifelong learning, that you do read a lot of the books that we discuss on the show and are really deeply engaged and often use this program and the rest of the things you hear on KERA not as the end of your knowledge of something, but as the launching point for further investigation. We love that because it's not possible to cover everything entirely. But public radio really is a wonderful start when you are beginning to understand something. I learn things all the time that I wouldn't have known about had I not heard about them on KERA. Your contribution right now makes this continued learning possible in your life and for the entire community. You can go to 1-888-694-6931 and make your contribution or go online to kera.org.
We need about 3,900 contributions to go to finish this drive. That's what's left, approximately, depending on how much each of those 3,900 contributions is. However, before 2 p.m. today, just 23 more contributions by 2 p.m. So please do your part, 888-694-6931. Hey, we have raised $3,100 during Think Today already, so thanks to everybody, every single one of you who's contributed, not just during Think Today, but today, yesterday, over the weekend, and since we started the campaign last Wednesday. However, if we still have yet to hear from you, what's keeping you? We're waiting for your call.
Your gift is the most important one. We can take it right now at 888-694-6931, and you can ask for a copy of Lost Dallas as your thank you gift with a contribution of $120 or more. You can also do this online at kera.org. We'll be back in just a minute with Mark Doty.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. You can enrich your career with new certificate programs in financial planning, web design, graphic design, and paralegal studies. And you can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Mark Doty. He is author of the new book Lost Dallas and historic preservation officer for the city of Dallas. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. By the way, Mark, what exactly is a historic preservation officer? Explain a little bit about what your job entails.
Sure. In a nutshell, I have been appointed by the mayor and by the Texas Historical Commission to serve as kind of the point person for the city of Dallas preservation program. So if there's any questions that anybody from the state or from the national level have, they kind of will know that they can come to me and either I can answer that question for them or find out that information and get it back to them. And so I'm part of the Sustainable Development and Construction Department at the city of Dallas and the Historic Preservation Division. And so I work with the Landmark Commission monthly to review cases for all the city historic districts.
Are those usually really easy relationships or how often is there friction?
It depends. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there are some things that we're doing here in the city that the state doesn't agree with. And then vice versa, there's some things that maybe some people are doing in the city that the Landmark Commission doesn't agree with. And so it's kind of a tightrope that sometimes I have to walk and my fellow staff have to walk as well to try to make everybody happy, which sometimes is
good luck with that.
Yeah, exactly, which is impossible most times, but we at least try.
Okay, so I promised everybody we would talk about the Texas School Book Depository, which now, of course, is home to the Sixth Floor Museum and some county offices, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
It was not always a school book depository.
That's right. Whenever the railroads found Dallas and whenever they came to Dallas in the 1880s and 1890s, the West End saw explosive growth, and it became the largest farm implement distribution center in the Southwest. So you had a lot of people coming in, a lot of companies from Chicago, from St. Louis, from other areas back east that opened up offices here in Dallas. And actually the Sixth Floor Museum was the Southern Rock Island Plow Company building. And that's where they set up their shop. And then it became the Texas School Book Depository, obviously, and that's where it really gained its notoriety was, for the events that surrounded the assassination of President Kennedy in the 1960s.
And what was under the location of what is now the JFK Memorial Plaza?
That actually was – a lot of people don't realize that Old Red Courthouse was surrounded by an actual courthouse square. Mm-hmm. You had one half that was taken down in the 30s for the Triple Underpass, which was kind of a brand new entryway into this part of downtown. But then the eastern end was just a collection of early – or late 19th and early 20th century, commercial buildings, some cast iron, two-story, maybe a couple of three-story buildings that were in that block. And, of course, all of those were erased whenever the memorial was put in place in the late 1960s.
We have an email here that I think will interest you. This is from Bob in Fort Worth, who says, some buildings are ugly when they're created. No matter how old they get, they never become beautiful. Do preservationists ever want to save old, ugly buildings?
Well, that is an interesting question because there are a lot of buildings around the country that were built in the late 50s and the early 60s right now that people are having some issues with. Boston City Hall is one that people, they don't really understand it. And yet it's such an example of that time period and of kind of the mentality of the architect and of the country at that time. People have an issue with Dallas City Hall, to be honest with you. I mean, Ian Pei designed it. He had a very specific design aesthetic, and yet people criticize the wide open plaza in front of it and the way it's very heavy set and it just looks very
hulking.
Foreboding and hulking, and it doesn't feel welcoming, which if you read what Ian Pei was trying to do, that's exactly the opposite. He wanted it, and the mayor at the time, Eric Johnson, wanted this building to present, government and how it's here for the people. Because this is right after the assassination of Kennedy in 63. And so Dallas really went through a hard time for about 5 years after that of just trying to kind of find itself. And so they wanted a building that we're Dallas and we're here and we're the government and we will protect you and serve you. And that's kind of interesting that people's thinking changes over time.
Were people happy with it when it was first built?
I think so. I think what people were really unhappy about was how long it took. Mm-hmm. I think it took over a decade to actually finish from the design all the way through to whenever actually people moved in. It took quite a while for it to happen.
Let's go to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We'll speak with Kristen in Mesquite. Hi, Kristen.
Hi. The author just mentioned the Sanger Harris building that's now a DART headquarters now, and it brought to mind those wonderful mosaics that were on the front of all of those stores at one time. And to my knowledge, I think one of the few that is left is in front is on the front of the store that was at Valley View. Mm-hmm. And since that property has been purchased and is going to be slowly demolished and or repurposed, I was wondering if he knows of any efforts to try and save one of the last of those mosaics. And I will take my answer off the air.
Thanks for your call.
Actually, that's one of the reasons why I actually included the Sanger Harris building is because whenever DART purchased the building, it had the largest mosaics in the world on the outside of it, and they stuccoed over and punched windows in it to, you know, make it more compatible for office space, which is completely understandable. She is right. The Sanger Harris, which was Foley's, now Macy's, at Valley View has that same exact motif on it. I think the Macy's store in Fort Worth at Hewland Mall has the exact same type of motif. And then Redbird Mall, the old Macy's store at Redbird Mall, or Southwest Center Mall, also has the same one. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I think that their plans, obviously, for Valley View are very fluid at this time, so I'm not sure exactly what's going to happen to the entire complex. But it'll be interesting to see if the new owners find value in that iconic mosaic pattern on that particular building.
Speaking of outdoor art, I had not realized that the downtown library was once home to a really famous or much talked about work of sculpture.
Right. Youth in the Hand of God was commissioned, and it was to be installed by a very well-known sculptor in California. At the time, though, which this was in the late 40s, early 50s, Dallas is very conservative at the time, and they did not like that the statue had a picture of a boy without any clothes on. And so much back and forth, you know, between the sculptor and with the city council, and finally the sculptor relented and put a pair of pants on the sculpture. And it hung there until the new library opened. And then the city didn't know what to do with the sculpture, and so actually the family of the sculptor took it back with them to California, and it's in their private collection on the West Coast.
Some parks have really undergone amazing changes, and there was a natural spring with a park around it, I think in the Oak Cliff area?
Yes, Kid Springs Park,
yes.
And then Old City Park actually had Browder Springs, which was a natural water supply for the city of Dallas. And, of course, half of Old City Park was lost whenever they put in R.L. Thornton Freeway, mm-hmm. the northern half of it. But we do still have a lot of parks that are there. You know, Lake Cliff has a lot of natural water features as well. Interestingly enough, Exall Park in East Dallas, it had Mill Creek that ran through it. And then whenever Mill Creek was covered over, unfortunately, during the 40s and 50s, it was taken out of that particular park as well as a component. And unfortunately, that's one of the reasons why East Dallas floods so much or as heavily during a heavy rainstorm is because we don't have any natural creeks left in East Dallas really to take that water down to White Rock and then onto the Trinity as well.
And people might remember this, but White Rock Lake has a really interesting history that we've talked about on the show, but I'm always fascinated by the time when it was barracks for the Civilian Conservation Corps.
Right. Because it was a Civilian Conservation Corps project, mm-hmm. And so they had obviously barracks, and that served actually as a prisoner of war camp after World War II, and then it also served as student housing for SMU students, which I think would have been interesting. I'm not sure if I would have enjoyed that or not. But Sally Rodriguez, who is my counterpart at the Parks Department, wrote a fascinating book on the history of White Rock Lake as part of the Arcadia Publishing series as well.
You got to have all these in your collection.
You
They're
do. I do, actually.
Really great books.
I do. My library at my office is a lot of Arcadia books.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We have Nathan on the line now in Fort Worth. Hey, Nathan.
Hello.
Hi, go right ahead.
I had a question about your guests, I guess, thoughts about the long-term future of Fair Park, given that the Science Place is leaving. And I always kind of wonder about the long-term viability of the cotton. Was a sports venue, and just curious given the historic nature of Fair Park and what a wonderful place it is, what do we think may happen there in the future?
Thanks for your call.
Our current mayor, Rawlings, and the city council have both said that Fair Park is one of our untapped resources here in the city of Dallas, and the Parks Department and the State Fair both have poured millions of dollars within the last 10 years in upgrading the facilities there, restoring the wonderful Art Deco architecture, the murals, the sculpture that is there. It's going to be interesting to see what happens there. I know that the Parks Department and the State Fair both are committed to Fair Park to try and get more events there. Obviously, the State Fair will always be there, as long as I hope so, because that's just a classical Dallas tradition. Hopefully, Texas OU will continue to stay at the Cotton Bowl during the State Fair. And we'll see what the museums leaving or maybe changing some of their focus. We'll see if maybe we can get some, you know, other groups that can come in. And, you know, maybe there's an opportunity for some mixed-use, you know, development to have some people actually live around the park with the dart stop there and make, you know, natural resource for people to live, you know, play in the park, and then, you know, be able to hop on the dart train to go to work downtown or wherever else.
My guest is Mark Doty. He is Historic Preservation Officer for the City of Dallas and author of the new book, Lost Dallas, part of Arcadia Publishing's Images of America series. We'll come back to our conversation with Mark in a few minutes. If you've got something that you remember about the city or you have a question, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. If you would like a copy of Lost Dallas and you would like to support KERA, Jeff Whittington, what should everybody do?
Call 888-694-6931. Contribute $120 to the station. That's $10 a month if you become a sustaining member of the station. Or go online to KERA.org and do it there. It's very easy to do.
It's easy to do. It's convenient. And we really appreciate your contribution. We are looking to raise $5,000 today during Think. So far, we have about $3,100. Thanks to you. Really, really appreciate it. Your call can be the next one, and you will inspire someone after you. And that's how these things work. If you have not made your contribution yet in this spring membership campaign, please take action now. Don't hold off. You will really enjoy a copy of Lost Dallas if that's what you choose as your thank you gift. Or you can make a gift in another amount other than $120. You can make it for more. Certainly, you can make it for less if you need to. But please do call us and become a member at kera.org or 1-888-694-6931.
It is the spring membership campaign. We would love for you to help the station out during this campaign. We'd like to end this drive in the next few days, by the end of the week, if at all possible. And if we can do that, it'd be the shortest time ever that we've reached our goal of $700,000. And to do it, just call 888-694-6931. Making the goal for Think Today will keep us on track to do that. These hourly goals are really important. And if you've enjoyed this conversation, if you've gotten something out of it, then please make that call right now. We want to end this campaign as quickly and as efficiently as possible so we can get back to uninterrupted programming, the programming that you know that you love on KERA.
We now have had an update. We've raised $4,340 today during Think. We need an additional $660. That's just a few of you calling and receiving as your thank you gift, Lost Dallas by Mark Doty. Lots of people collect this series because it's such a great treasure trove of information about the place where we live, the places that we visit, that we remember. It's really a wonderful series, and this is a fantastic addition. Get the book anywhere, but if you're ready to make a contribution to KERA, it's a perfect synthesis of the things that you care about and are interested in.
Yeah, and you know, today is a really great day. We've had a tremendous response from many of you today. So thank you so much if you have gotten on board with the station today, either on the phone at 888-694-6931, or if you contributed online at kera.org. If you haven't, this is a great opportunity today for you to join a winning team here. The station is, things are going well today, and things are going well in this drive, and things are going well in the KERA community when we hear from you. And so we'd love to hear from you. You're the one, essentially, that we're still waiting to hear from at 888-694-6931. 6931.
And it's really, maybe you've held off because you're like, I just can't stand to think about sending my money somewhere for something that I'm already getting. But that's the whole point. You're already getting because someone else made a contribution. Someone else has been gifting your membership for however long you've been listening without becoming a member. KERA.org is the place to go to make your contribution online, or you can go to 1-888-694-6931. Once you, I don't know, break down and become a member, you'll realize it's not a big deal. It actually feels great. It feels like you are engaging in something that you believe is important in your community. We know that you value KERA in your own life. Many of you wish you could get more of your friends and relatives to listen to the station and talk to you about the things you hear. You know that there is a certain sort of quality. Our journalist team, BJ Austin and Sam Baker and Justin Martin and Shelley Koffler and Bill Zeebel, they win award after award after award for the coverage that they bring to you. That coverage costs money, and certainly it costs money to have the NPR news crews out throughout the entire world. Your contribution helps to make this programming possible.
I want to thank Kimberly Nunez and Garland, Dot Nunjaya and Palaria and Richardson. Thanks to Kate Aoki in Dallas. Hello, Kate Aoki. Thank you so much. Thanks to Megan McIntyre and Addison. We also owe thanks to Natalie Jones in Fort Worth, Morgan and Christopher in Dallas, Roman Pinzonzotto in Plano, and Aaron Lamb in Dallas.
Thank you so much, Allison Victoria in Dallas, Brian and Tracy Nielsen in North Richland Hills. Thank you, Michelle Witcher and Will Clark in Dallas. Thank you, Linda and Howard Shapiro in Dallas. Thank you, Aileen Stark in Denton and Alicia Alicia in Denton, and Mind McKinney in Fort Worth. Thank you also, Natalie Boyson in Crowley. We would love to read your name next. We are really, really grateful to those of you who support the station and specifically who support this show, Think, which is produced just for you here in North Texas.
888-694-6931 is our telephone number. The place on the web, it's KERA.org. Please do your part right now so that we can sooner rather than later take you back to uninterrupted programming on the station. It's really easy for you to do. You decide what the station, what the service is worth to you, and then you just contribute that amount of money to KERA.
Think about this. How many hours a month do you spend on movies? Do you spend watching movies? And then think about how much you spend paying the ticket price for movies, and then apply that to the kind of listening that you do to KERA. If you were to pay per hour what you spend on movie entertainment, that would be a great deal of money. Maybe you don't want to do that much, but maybe you want to do, you know, $10 a month for all the listening that you do, or 20 or 30. You can make your contribution now at KERA.org or 888-694-6931. And you can receive a copy of Mark Doty's new book, Lost Dallas, with a contribution at or above $120. Thank you so much for your support. We'll be back in a minute with Mark Doty.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. You can enrich your career with new certificate programs in financial planning, web design, graphic design, and paralegal studies. And you can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Mark Doty is my guest this hour. He's historic preservation officer for the city of Dallas and author of the new book Lost Dallas, which is part of Arcadia Publishing's Images of America series. Join us by calling 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. That's where we hear from Mellon, who writes, I still lament the loss of the Dr. Pepper plant on Mockingbird.
That building actually was one of those that I featured in my East Dallas chapter, and it has a two-page spread, kind of the iconic front entry, and then I have a picture also of the interior. And that's one of those preservation battles that people still lament to this day, that we had thought that we had saved the building, we had a developer that was really interested in adaptive use, some sort of repurpose for the building. And then at the ninth hour, it just kind of fell apart and it was torn down. And luckily, it was replaced with, you know, more commercial buildings and some apartments. So you still have buildings on the site, unlike a lot of other buildings where there may just be either a vacant lot or a parking lot. But That is one of those things that people always, whenever I do presentations or talk to people, they're like, oh, Dr. Pepper, oh, you know, it's just, you know, big sigh. And it is a tragedy that that had to come down, because it was a fantastic building.
You know, there are a lot of examples in the book of things that were torn down and now just a parking lot is there, or the ultimate plans for construction fell through.
That's probably where the majority of our parking lots came from downtown, is that particularly during the 70s and the 80s, during the oil boom at that time, you know, developers were coming in. They were amassing, you know, large pieces and blocks of land, and they had to get rid of all of the buildings that were on it, you know, hoping that it would be attractive to someone else that would build something. And there were plans. And then, of course, whenever the economy tanked, all they could do was, you know, pave it over and make it a parking lot. And that's actually probably one of the biggest tragedies, you know, aside from Ross Avenue and Dr. Pepper, is, you know, our downtown. If you look at pictures and aerial shots of downtown in the 30s and 40s, it was dense. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were so thousands of buildings that were down there. And whenever we talk about trying to revitalize downtown, it's hard because we don't have that connective tissue between our individual districts downtown. You know, you go to West End, but you have to walk, you know, two or three blocks through nothing, essentially, just parking lots to get to Main Street, you know, the main Street district. And so it'd be nice, you know, if we had maybe just even a quarter of those smaller commercial buildings back, that would give a little bit of a scale and life back, you know, back to downtown.
And yet from a practical standpoint, we do need parking. I mean, that's one of the things, one of the reasons people say they don't go downtown is they don't know what to do with their car.
That's true. And it would also be nice, you know, if people would construct parking garages, mm-hmm. maybe on some of those spots, and they would have retail along the bottom of them with parking above. So you kind of would have the best of both worlds. You know, you have an engaging street presence, but then you'd also have parking for all the people that hopefully would be coming back downtown to enjoy all the things that are still downtown.
Let's go back to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We'll speak with Joe in Fort Worth. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I'm curious what just normal people, taxpayers, can do to encourage school boards and city planners to build buildings that we're going to want around in 60 years. I think about the difference in Fort Worth's Polytechnic High School, which is such a gorgeous building, and in any high school that's been built in the last 5 years that looks like brown brick prison.
Hmm. What do you think about that, Mark?
Well, I think that there's a reason why Old Dallas High School is still here. It's because the Alumni Association was so active and lobbied the city council to save it whenever it was threatened with, you know, being demolished. It had been sold to a California developer who wanted to tear it down. And
this is the one on the edge of Uptown.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. You know, Adamson High School is another good example in North Oak Cliff. You know, they rallied around, and it's now a City of Dallas landmark as well, so it is protected. I think just engaging, you know, who you vote for, you know, your city council person, the mayors, the planning directors in whatever town you live in, but even your neighbors, you know. It's interesting that I think one of our next battles also is just kind of those everyday buildings that people drive by all the time, but they don't really think about as not always being there until they're not there. You know, you have churches, you have fire stations, you have schools, you have hospitals, and kind of these things that are just part of your everyday drive. And then all of a sudden they're not there. It was interesting seeing how many drive-in movie theaters there were, you know, particularly in Oak Cliff, and how people loved them. I still had people comment about, you know, the Jefferson Drive-In, and even the, you know, the Bronco Bowl on Fort Worth Avenue, which I included, you know, in the book. And people are like, oh, I remember, you know, going to see so-and-so there at the Bronco Bowl. And it's just, you don't think about those things until they're no longer there. And so I think it's just lobbying people, you know, those elected officials. But then also, you know, you're just your neighbors just mm-hmm. trying to raise a little more awareness.
Yeah, I think, Mark, the book really has kind of packs a wallet for me. I've only lived in Dallas since 99, and yet there's a lot. There's the Bronco Bowl. There's Reunion Arena. There are several structures featured here that no longer exist that we've lost in the last decade.
That's right. And I wanted to include those iconic losses, you know, the Baker Hotel, the Dallas Cotton Exchange, you know, Dr. Pepper. But then again, I wanted to include the Bronco Bowls, you know, the houses on Maple Avenue that people probably didn't realize that Maple Avenue was a was a very beautiful residential street that rivaled, you know, Swiss Avenue at the time. And almost, you know, all of those are gone as well. You know, schools, again, like I said, but, you know, restaurants, shopping areas. I had Prestonwood, you know, Town Center on the far north side of Dallas that people went to forever that, you know, went ice skating there. And it's not there anymore.
There's a rock my kids like to climb on not too far from the Kalita Humphreys Theater. And down in that park on Turtle Creek, some kid a long time ago scratched 1918 into the rock. And it's funny to think about. Sure, kids have been playing there. People have been strolling there for a really long time.
Absolutely. You know, Turtle Creek, all the parkway, that was part of George Kessler's 1911 plan for the city of Dallas. And that's part of his, you know, realized plan for the city of Dallas. And that's definitely a fantastic amenity.
We have an email here from Kurt in Dallas who says, can you talk a little bit about some of the casualties that we lost when Dallas built the tollway? I don't remember any tollway examples in the book. I don't know if that's something that you looked into or not.
Most of that was the Little Mexico neighborhood. And since there was a fantastic Arcadia book, Little Mexico, done earlier, I tried to not do as many of the things with the Little Mexico neighborhood for, again, because I was kind of constrained by space. But, you know, obviously that entire neighborhood, all you have left is the Luna Tortilla Factory, St. Anne's School, as well as Pike Park. You could also kind of take a look at State Thomas also. That wasn't victim of the tollway, but you had these neighborhoods that, again, whenever it started to gentrify and to change and commercialize, you lost a lot of the African-American, you know, neighborhood stores, you know, the Paul Dunbar Library Branch, the housing stock, et cetera. And that's unfortunately what happened with Little Mexico whenever the toll road came through as well.
Do you have a conflicted relationship? As a preservation officer, you want to preserve what's new, what's old and what's important, but you're not an enemy of anything new. Can you talk a little bit about your philosophy?
Well, I think that's what people are surprised about whenever they come down and sit with us, with our staff at the city, is we want people to enjoy their buildings. We want people to enjoy living in the city of Dallas. That's our number one goal. We want them to invest in it. You know, we've been talking, you know, with developers with the old Lone Star Gas complex, with the Statler Hilton, you know, hopefully with Old Dallas High School. And we'll say, you know, these are your restrictions, because if you're City of Dallas Landmark, you do have some restrictions and you have some rules that you have to kind of play by. But again, you know, we want these buildings to become a contributing part to the city again. We don't want them just to sit and you know, molder and ruin. So, again, it's kind of that tightrope of, you know, how can we still preserve and respect the building as it is, but then kind of get a new use out of it. I think Old Parkland Hospital is a perfect example of how we restored the building, put a beautiful new addition on the back, and now, you know, Mr. Crow has added all these other office buildings on the back of the property, and it's a contributing, you know, part of the neighborhood again.
We have an email here from Alex who writes, I work at Dallas Fire Station number 11. It's on the Register of Historic Places, built and staffed in 1909. It is the oldest working fire station in Texas, one of the few in Dallas that still has, well, I'll just read this description. It's great. Brass fire poles, quite a bit of history. You can still see the hay lofts and braces for the horse-drawn pumpers in the floor. It is one of the busiest stations in Dallas. We tend to run mostly at night. The air conditioning and heat almost never work properly. The bay doors are too narrow. You have to be careful backing the engine and truck in and climbing the stairs. You get really tired. But firemen who work there all love that building, and we take quite a bit of pride in the old-style architecture and skilled labor that went into building it. Alex, I want to thank you so much for that description, because if people haven't seen it, it really is a terrific example of the way we did things 100 years ago.
That's right, and I think that's what a lot of people miss also, is that the craftsmanship, I mean, the materials that went into those buildings. I mean, there's a reason why they've stood for, you know, 124 years, you know, some of them. And so whenever we tear them down, you know, you're throwing away all this really good material and just a part of, you know, what makes Dallas, Dallas, essentially.
Mark Doty is a historic preservation officer for the city of Dallas and author of the brand new book, Lost Dallas. That's part of Arcadia Publishing's Images of America series. Mark, it's always fascinating to have you on. Thank you so much for giving us this hour.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And I want to encourage all my friends that are listening right now to please contribute to this program and to KERA, definitely. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. If you would like, whether you are a close personal friend of Mark Doty or not, if you would like to receive a thank you copy of the book and also support this radio station, you can do that online now at kera.org or over the phone at 1-888-694-6931. Jeff Whittington is back. He's senior producer of Think. And Jeff, I know when you saw this book come in, you said that's going to be a great one to have when we are in the spring membership campaign.
Well, we've covered several in this series. We did the White Rock Lake book. I think we did it when we had a TV show, on the TV show and on the radio show, I think, because everybody here loves this topic. And I'm so excited because you mentioned earlier in the hour that there's possibly one on Fort Worth.
That was a tip from our author who came in and said he has heard that there is one in the works. And we are we will be very excited to talk about that on the show.
Yeah, I just feel like you learn so much about what's coming by looking back. And where else do you get a chance to take the time to talk about what was and what is no more, and really talk about what it means today, other than on public radio, other than on KERA, other than on the Think Show. And, you know, that's what we do here. We take the time to really talk about what it means, what's happened, what it means for you, what it means for everybody else, and what, if anything, we can do about it, or what the options are, what your options are. We don't tell you what to do. You decide what to do. But we hope that we give you the tools that you need to know about our world. And that's what these conversations are really all about. So it's a real thrill to be able to cover this today. We do have copies of this book available when you join the station today at the $120 membership level. Again, the paperback version of this book is out. It's the original paperback version. It's available elsewhere. So you can get the book and still support KERA. But if you want to do it all at once, we're trying to make it as easy as possible for you.
You can do that. You can get your copy at kera.org or over the phone at 1-888-694-6931. You know, Mark Doty is an example of our favorite kind of guest on the show because he comes on and he understands all of the conflicts and the nuances of preservation and conservation and of people wanting to build new things. And it's always great to be able to talk about things that are complicated issues and know that you as an audience are drawn to this work. Honestly, Jeff and I couldn't work at another radio station in this market and have an hour-long conversation with someone like Mark Doty that took the tone that this one did, which is just, you know, very interested and interesting. That's because of you, our audience. But frankly, the other reason we couldn't have it elsewhere is because other stations earn their money with commercial advertising. They are essentially making money because you are listening. That's not how it works here. We ask you to help us have enough money to continue operating. And in return, we thank you with gifts like Mark Doty's new book, Lost Dallas. And also, we just provide for you another year of quality news and information and entertainment. Please take a step, take action to support this radio station that you love by going to kera.org or by calling 1-888-694-6931.
So I'm looking at the book. Krista, we're getting a word from down the hall in Pledge Control Central that many of you are joining at the $120 level today and picking up your very own copy of Lost Dallas. It's part of the Images of America series from Arcadia Publishing. It's 127 pages long. And Chris, this book has at least two or even three or four photographs on every page. I think I saw a couple of pages with
But they're big
three.
Enough that you can see them well.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. Okay, maybe it's one or two, but these are great historical photographs of Dallas, of different regions of Dallas, some of those old souvenir postcards and things like that. It's really a neat book. And we're so excited to be able to offer it to you. Just call 888-694-6931. Make a $120 contribution, and you can pick up your very own copy. You can also do it online at kera.org. I want to thank a few folks. We heard from Auden Delgado in Garland, Alyssa Valdez in Richardson, Kathy Harris in Dallas, Joe Privratel in Denton, Celia Pena in Arlington, Sarah Toller in Dallas, April Morris, thanks to April Morris in Denton, and Craig Engelmeyer in Dallas, and Jane Boyd in Grapevine.
I don't believe it's any relation, but Jane, that's a fantastic last name. Enjoy it. Also want to say thank you to Richard Rosperm in Flower Mound and Liz Langdon in Denton. Thank you, Bill Kirkland in Dallas and Thomas Linehan in Dallas. Thank you, Jim and Carrie Seagoat in Fort Worth and Douglas Howard in Dallas. Thank you, Nina Atwood in Dallas. Really appreciate it. Jean Barthelme in Frisco and M&M Barry Apple. Oh, Mr. and Mrs. Barry Applewhite in Plano. Thank you very much.
Hey, coming up in just a few minutes, on the world, workers from the West African nation of Mali made a good living in Libya. Then came the Libyan Civil War, and now there are 20,000 Malians who fled for home. They're going to cover how the Libyan conflict brought misery to Mali. That's coming up at 2 o'clock here. Just in a couple of minutes, you're going to hear the world. So take a moment right now to support KERA, the station that brings you not only local programming like Think, but also really the entire world in an hour. And then, of course, All Things Considered this afternoons. In the afternoons, there's going to be Marketplace. You know what you get from KERA. That's why you listen. So please do your part right now to help keep it strong and to help pay the bills. Call 888-694-6931 or click and join at kera.org.
Sometimes I find myself resisting buying something that I sort of want and really need. And then I think, no, this is important in my life, and I just do it. And that's a lot of times the way it goes when you're supporting KERA. You can find a million reasons not to do it, and then you stop yourself and think, but there's a million more reasons to do it. And it's really a simple transaction. You just go online to kera.org or call 1-888-694-6931.
Thanks very much for your support.